It is Saturday morning, and this is your Saturday Morning Garden Show in the Garden. I'm Stephen E. Pop, and I'm here with my colleagues Joe Truscott and Martin Quigley. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it is a foggy, dreary.
We can't ask for a better morning for you to be listening to us.
Absolutely. We wanted to have a discussion this morning about using landscape designers, landscape architects, landscape maintenance professionals, landscape installers, et cetera, et cetera.
And arborists.
And, well, perhaps arborists as well. And when one might wish to acquire the services of such a professional individual. There are some major differences, however, between all of those categories. And I think I didn't mention also perhaps maybe you just want to have a consultant or a garden coach, which has always been a strange term to me. I always imagine somebody, you know.
Well, they have lifestyle coaches.
Yeah.
Why not garden coaches?
Well, I don't know. I always always imagine a cheerleader out in the garden go, yeah, clip those roses. Anyway, I digress.
There are a whole lot of specialized reps.
There
the
are.
Gardeners, too.
There
lift,
are.
Lift, bend, stretch. Lift, bend.
Yes, get your ergonomics down. And for this show also, we would like to encourage you, our listeners, if you have a question.
A brief question.
Or something that you, an inquiry or maybe a commentary on your own experience working with landscape designers, et cetera, you can give us a call here at the station. And what's that number, Joe?
Oh, that number is 831-900-5773, and I'll be here to pick up your call and take down your well-thought-out question.
That's right.
Anytime, because we're talking about you spending money, and we're
That's
here
right.
to really coach you into ways that you get the biggest bang for your buck.
We hope. We do hope. And if you prefer, you can also email us here. And the email address is onair@ksqd.org. And I will be checking the email throughout the show.
Mm-hmm.
So all three of us have, in our prestigious careers as horticulture people, we've
plant enthusiasts.
Plant enthusiasts.
Of varying degrees.
Yeah. of course, you know, whether we've worked in the trades professionally or otherwise, I've done landscape design, and I've been and still do consulting work. I think both of you also do consulting work for garden situations. But there's a distinct difference between someone who is a landscape designer and someone who is an architect. And I'm just going to start out by saying that I'm highly opinionated when it comes to architects. I'm not here to insult anyone or to, you know, create difficulties. But to be an architect, you do need to have a degree. And you need to be trained, and you need to have all these special things going.
And you need to be licensed.
And to be a landscape designer, you can be licensed or unlicensed.
You need a pickup and two shovels, and you're in business.
You can be. That's exactly true. There is
pickup that runs.
There is a specific there is a specific distinction, however, on what a unlicensed or licensed landscape designer can do for you. And the one thing that you need to keep in mind, at least in the state of California, is that if you are looking for someone to do a design for your dream garden and you are putting out for bids, only a licensed contractor may make a bid, or landscape designer licensed may make a bid on your design. If they are not licensed, all that they can do is present you with a quote on time and materials. So this is my hourly rate, and this is what I'm predicting the expenses will be for the materials, the plants, et cetera, et cetera.
But let me interject here. Often when you're doing a major landscape design or revision or from scratch, either way, the hardscape ends up eating up most of your budget, although the vision is all these lovely plants from perennials to annuals to trees, you end up at the end where you've overrun on the sidewalks, the retaining walls or something like that. Yeah. And so the client still has a vision of this wonderful, fairly put together plant collection, and that's where it falls apart.
And I'm glad you brought up that vision part, because I can't tell you how many times I would go for an initial interview with a client to find out what they were looking to get. And I would often, more than once, I would have them hold up like a Sunset Western Garden magazine or something, and it's got this picture of this lush, tropical, Hawaiian, Tahitian look. And they say, well, this is what I'm looking for, but I want it to be drought-tolerant and maintenance-free. Right. And you're kind of going, well, I wonder why I came here.
And you have to tell your clients every time there is no such thing as a maintenance-free garden.
Amen.
Even if you have asked AstroTurf or some other fake lawn substitute. Everything has to be cleaned. Everything has to be tended. And when you have a garden, you have to look at your plants. They're not just furniture. They do change from day to day. And that's the pleasure in gardening, is seeing flowers open and seeds ripen and the whole cycle of life that goes through the year. But if you just think of it, I want it to look nice, but I don't want to do anything with it, then you might want to reduce your expectations.
Now, Martin, you also mentioned in terms of costs and hardscape. Mm. When I was a carpenter for a number of years, we used to sort of have this formula that we could use, and it was very much a rule of thumb. But you used to be able to say that the labor will equal in cost the materials.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that holds. Well, it certainly doesn't hold true anymore with the way prices have gone up on lumber and other supplies. But do you think it was ever that way with plants and landscaping and hardscape and all of that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, but it's not always the case. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility where your trade-off is. And, of course, labor costs have gone up significantly, which is, I think, good for everyone.
Yeah.
But, again, the materials themselves, if you haven't budgeted, and you need somebody to help you budget, somebody who can tell you the difference between wholesale prices and retail prices. Many of us licensed or registered people can get wholesale prices if we have a wholesale number.
That's right.
And you can save a lot of money that way rather than going to
that's
the store yourself.
That's if the individual you're working with will pass that savings along to you.
Right.
And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. I know it was a practice a lot of the time to at least split that difference with the client. Well, you mentioned budget, and I think that's probably the first thing you want to start with is decide just about how much money do I want to spend on this project before I've interviewed anybody. But let's go into the interview process a little bit. I would say, first and foremost, you have to be able to get along with the individual. You have to be able to talk to them.
Well, but that takes a little time sometimes.
Yeah, but what else are you looking for in hiring a professional?
Well, you're looking for someone who knows the trade. Whatever aspect it is, whether it's designing a retaining wall or picking out wonderful tree specimens, it has to be somebody who, if not formally educated, is self-educated to deal with the vision that you have for yourself. Now, as far as budgeting goes, one of the ways you can reduce your plant material budget is by buying smaller specimens, whether it's trees and shrubs. And here's a little caveat. Many people want that instant gratification, and so they'll pay a lot of extra money to spade in a tree or something fairly mature.
Sure.
But be aware that when a tree is already mature and you move it, it might just sit there for a few years or indefinitely and not flourish. And lots of work has shown that a 2-inch diameter tree and a 6-inch diameter tree are planted at the same time, and in a couple of years, the 2-inch diameter has grown much bigger and faster than the 6-inch tree. And so what you're paying for when you buy plant materials is time. Yes, you're talking about the plant itself, but you're paying for the care that it's taken over years.
Over years to grow it, yeah,
right. Exactly. And so they're not just vegetables that are going to go bad on the windowsill. They are living organisms. You have to be aware of that. It's like you want to have a fish tank, but I don't want to take care of it.
Yeah,
and
no,
you know what happens there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you really need to know precisely, and this is where a consultant can help you, to focus on what you need, whether it's a picnic area or a mini golf thing or a bocce court. There are all sorts of fun things you can do with your space, and just putting in some foundation shrubs and a lawn usually isn't it.
So taking it from that point, too, in terms of the costs and trying to be relative with the costs, I think that there are sometimes people who they want the designer to tell them what they want. And I think that's a little tricky. I mean, if you don't have some concept going in, you may get sold a bill of goods or a plan that's never going to end. And I think Mr. Truscott has a question from a listener.
If Mr. Truscott has a microphone, right. He does have a microphone. Now, actually, we got a call, and there was a question that I think we should address is, what happens now that there has been a significant rain and all the spring bulbs are coming alive?
Because now this is our spring. This is our spring. November,
so
rain.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the question is what's going to happen, you know, in February and March with those plants?
Other things will be blooming.
Okay.
I mean, there's a cycle. I mean, some plants bloom for 3 days and some of them bloom for 3 months. And that's the joy of here being on the West Coast in this wonderful marine-influenced climate, is that you can grow year-round and you don't have to wait for April or May to start putting in your plants. Now's the time to be putting in your cool weather vegetables, for instance. So when the rains come, that's the end of our dormant season. 3 weeks ago it was hotter, the hottest days usually in September.
It's common, yeah.
And then boom, the currents shift, and so here we are at the beginning of our rainy season with a really excellent rain.
So I've already walked past a garden where the paper whites were in full bloom already.
Mine are coming up, yeah. A lot of the bulbs that they've been, you know, think of the naked ladies, the belladonnas that go dormant, and you don't. You have the big clump of leaves, and then the leaves wither in yellow, and then you've got 2 or 3 months of nothing but bare soil, and then those stalks come popping out of the ground. So they're done. That's usually the end of the drought season, and now all the spring things are coming. And you can have pansies and tulips, and, well, depending on the gopher situation, you can have lots of things in your garden that are blooming every month of the year.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that question, caller, and I want to remind everyone, this is KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQD Prunedale.
And the number is?
Oh, the number is 831-900-5773 if you have a question, too.
I'm ready to answer your call.
Mr. Joe Truscott is sitting by.
pepped up with lots of caffeine.
Truly.
But getting back to the landscape thing,
one
of the questions that I jotted down is, as you're developing it, please ask your landscaper what it's going to look like in 5 years.
Well, and
what it's going to look like in 10 years.
Right, and that's where some skill takes takes a very important role, because you have to know what is going to happen with this plant that you put in. It's a cute little bush, and the next year it's taken over your neighbor's driveway.
Not so much you, the client, as the professional who's doing the design for you to be qualified needs to know that at build out or at grow out, this plant is going to fill this space.
Right.
So when oftentimes you might see a design, this is a great question, by the way, does your design represent what my landscape will look like in its fullness?
Not necessarily.
You need to qualify.
You can pay extra for somebody to do a three-dimensional drawing of what it's going to look like in 10
back
years.
In the day, I was doing blue lines.
Right,
I did about 30
too.
Of those, and boy, are those a hassle.
They are.
You know, in comes CAD, you know, computer-aided design, and
anyone
is a designer.
In some ways, computer-aided design is like AI. It is. Mm-hmm. It tends to push you into fairly rigid layouts, and you have you have no freedom after that. But you can remember, you have to establish some kind of empathy with your designer, your consultant, or even your maintenance workers, that they know what to do with the plants once they're in. And that is a real downfall, because you don't need licensing to be a landscape maintenance person or start a business. Really, you do need the basic tools. But there are so many people I know who have gardeners who really don't know what the plants are.
Oh, and, yeah. And that's just so essential.
And
yeah.
So they'll trim something that doesn't need to be trimmed, or they'll pull out all your perennials once they finish blooming that year instead
well,
of
the guy, the owner of the company can come in and you can have a conversation with him about this is how I want my roses pruned or this or that. And then the crew comes in, he leaves, and you come out and your roses are all pruned to the ground.
Well, and that's another thing with the maintenance company. Sometimes you won't get the same crew from month to month or week to week.
Good point.
And that means nobody
no familiarity.
Today knows what happened to the shrubs in the last year or whatever long
so
time.
Back in the 70s, we called those guys the mow, blow, and go guys. Right.
Right. And they still blow.
They still exist.
Yeah. But also that's a crucial question. Are the people that are going to be maintaining the garden the same people for the next couple of years? You want to make sure that there's some stability.
Continuity.
Yeah. But part of that is up to you as the garden owner, the client. You need to look at your plants and get familiar with them. And if something looks weird, it shouldn't be discovered 3 months later. It should be soon.
Another important factor, and I encountered this a lot of the time, I would do my designs and I would also then do the installation. But as I grew older and... Well, you know, we get old and we don't quite have the get up and go that it takes in the old days that we had to do the work. You have to find out whether or not your design, there's anyone who's going to be able to implement it.
Right.
You know, who's going to do the installation? Does this designer have a crew that he works with, a landscape company or a contractor who ordinarily he has experience with and who's going to do it per the specifications of the plant?
Right, and who knows how to plant? You don't dig the holes too deep.
Right.
The plants will sink down. You need to realize that tree roots grow horizontally more than they do vertically, so many people think that tree roots are like a giant carrot that goes straight down. And in fact, 90% of the roots are within 12 inches of the surface, and they go three times the canopy of the tree.
Talk a little bit about the actual soil, because if there was one mistake that I made, it was not waiting and finding out what was actually in the soil before I started my grand
like having
rose
an assay
garden.
Done,
and,
or,
you know, what's in that soil?
And remember, you have to, when you look at soil, it's not just the soil chemistry, it's also the texture. What's the substrate? Is it clay? Is it sandy? All those things will affect plant growth, and everybody around here knows hydrangeas. You can change the color by adding acid. It's a little naive to think that you can change the alkalinity or acidity in a soil with a surface application.
Right.
The best way to improve any soil is organic matter. And adding sand to clay makes bricks, not soil.
Sand to clay, throw money away. Clay to sand, money in hand. Yes.
But also organic material can amend the soil to a certain degree,
right.
But it's eventually going to break down, and you're going to back down into the kind of soil you have to
That's
begin
right.
with.
And so no matter what you do, the soil will always win over time unless you keep it up, and that can be expensive. So if you appreciate, and in every sense of the word, you appreciate the soil you have, then you can, hopefully you or your consultant can advise you as to what plants will be happy there. And luckily for us, a lot of the Mediterranean climate plants are fairly happy on bad soils.
One of my observations in my own neighborhood is that these landscape designers, architects, workers, what I'm not sure what they are, come in and they almost strip mine the yard. They come in and they dig out everything and go way down in and then put in something else. Now, is that advisable? Is that something that you should do? Should you work on it?
Not from my perspective.
No. Well, here's something that I'm doing now is a lot of consulting on garden renovation and restoration. And part of that is taking the existing plants and working with them.
Right.
Instead of ripping them out and starting over, there's remedial pruning. Even a tree that's been neglected for decades can be brought back into size or shape or structure that is healthy for the tree and more aesthetically wonderful.
Trying to work with what you have.
Right.
Yeah,
lots of shrubs. And so here's where the difference between shearing and pruning. Shearing is where you shape the outside of it. Works well with boxwood, small leaf things.
Topiaries.
But those take a lot of maintenance too, and that's something that you have to have some skill for. But if you prune instead of shear, you're selecting entire branches to remove for why do you prune? For dead, disease, defective, or what's the fourth D?
Demented.
Deranged. That's deranged. Deranged. So if they're wonky, but you're pruning for structure, for health, and for display.
Now, let's get back for a moment to the actual hiring of our contractor. Mm-hmm. There are going to be those who want to know, you know, do I need a contract? Should I have a contract? I kind of recommend it if you're working with a licensed individual. You're not going to get that ordinarily with an unlicensed individual. It's not uncommon, especially in construction projects, for instance, with a general contractor or a building contractor, that they're going to present you with a price, and then they're also going to ask for 10 to 20% down as the project starts.
Yeah.
So is that something that a client would expect as well with a landscape designer?
Not always. No, it's not. Again, when you're not licensed, you're not bound by the rules of bidding and contracting. So you don't have to have an estimate coming up. But one way, if you're going to talk to a garden designer, landscape architect, anybody who's coming into your yard or your garden to help you, the best way to interview them is to walk around your property and look at everything and see if they know what the trees are, if they know what the shrubs are. If they have no clue, well, it's a big green tree.
Or if they use only common names.
Right, and you really have to be on top of that. Otherwise, you can have things removed. Or some landscape maintenance companies come in and nip everything way, way, way back every time they come just to show you they've been there. Or look at palm trees, for instance. They'll take off not only all the brown leaves, but they'll go in and take off the yellow leaves and some of the green leaves to clean it up. But that weakens the growing point of the palm. And so, again, somebody has to know the plant and what will treat it the best.
I've seen so many palm trees abused by having
Q-tipping.
You really have to have an affection for what you own. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people buy a new house, and they buy a house and they want it to look absolutely perfect immediately. And gardens take time. It's not going to just be instantaneous. And if somebody can, you know, all of a sudden create a garden for you that looks like it's aged, it's not going
to
work.
It isn't. But, you know, if you're waiting for something to grow in, you don't have to have a lot of bare soil or mulch or anything. You can always put in annuals, something fast growing that will give you color and fill in those spaces while your shrubbery and trees are getting size.
Mm-hmm. So another question that comes up is, do I actually need to have a designer or an architect or even a consultant? Can't I learn how to do this myself, come up with my own design? Of course, the short answer is obviously yes, but there are a few perhaps tips that we could offer about, you know, how to go about that without having to go to school and get a degree in horticulture or something. I would recommend first that you start with a base plan, which is you measure out the area that you want to develop this garden space or landscape in. Mm-hmm. And landscape, as you pointed out, Martin, also means hardscape, not just the plants. And, you know, determine ahead of time what is your desired use for this space. Do you want to have a place where you're going to entertain? Do you want to have a place where you can gather the family
kids can play in the lawn or something?
Or do you want a vegetable garden included, a cutting garden, you know, bulbs and cut flowers, fruits, those sorts of things?
Well, if you have acreage, you can have all of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely you can.
If your yard is 20 feet by 20 feet.
Which is my favorite kind of clientele. But you know, I used to do a lot of great tiny gardens. Small space
gardens.
They're
really wonderful.
You know, San Francisco and places like that. And you can just make these places of solitude, of pure enjoyment, just to be able to sit, have a cup of tea, watch the birds and the butterflies.
And don't forget, you know, not all plants have to be in the ground. If you have a concrete patio,
containers.
Now, here you have to be careful about drainage. There has to be good drainage because when the rains come, if a pot fills up with water, the plants can drown and or just rot. And so it's very important with pots to get it right. But one of the other things, when you're looking at your site, You have to see what it's telling you. Where mm-hmm. are the slopes? Are there slopes? Are there low spots? If you have a natural mm-hmm. low spot that's going to accumulate more water, yep. that's where you put a certain yeah, kind
how,
of plant that likes it.
How deep is it? Do you have any microclimates?
Are you
going to
have
identify?
Erosion? I mean, you're using plants for erosion control. They can be both beautiful and functional in that sense.
What's the aspect? Are you facing south? Are you facing north?
Have no idea. I say, so what's the aspect of this? And what do you mean aspect? And I say, which direction does it face? North, east, south, west? And they say, I don't know, yeah. which always astonishes me. So then I ask, where does the sun come up in the morning? And where does the sun go down? And so that's the east and the west. And of course, it changes a little bit with the season.
And also, from which direction does the wind usually blow?
Right. Great question.
But there are prevailing winds. Some people plant wind breaks. Sometimes they're effective. A real windbreak has several lines of defense going up in height.
And
so the wind is deflected uh-huh. upward.
And here's another one that a lot of people don't think about is who owned this property prior to you or what was its use? I mean, was there an abattoir there? Or in which case you'll probably have lots of
or
nitrogen.
Or a gas station.
Or a gas station. Or in my case, what I knew but didn't take into account on my own property was that the former owner was a limner, a sign painter, and he had a brother-in-law who lived there and did auto body work.
Mm, wow.
And so, you know, here I would plant a plant and it would be fine for a year and then died. And then I would dig down deeper and find out, well, they dumped oil there or they dumped paint there or something of that
paint
nature.
And oil, especially with new construction, a lot of contractors take an easy way out. Instead of disposing of oil, they just mm-hmm. pour it into the ground.
So it doesn't go away.
So if your client can and you know have some idea of who was here before and what did they do.
And this is all important. When you
where
look
are the bodies
at the topography,
buried?
You do not want to put in a garden planting and then have it erode out in the first big rainfall. You need to think what's going to happen due to the topography and the drainage patterns.
Okay.
I mean, we've been talking about some real big topics, but I do want to, because it came in into my head, one of the things that I learned, and it's such a simple technique that all gardeners can use. If you like to sit outside in the evening, in the afternoon, make sure that your white or yellow flowered plants are the furthest away, because you will see those flowers as the sun is setting. Ooh. If you've got dark orange or red or purple things,
they disappear. Right.
It's one of the simplest little techniques, and it really does
work. Or you can go hog wild like Vita Sackville West and do a white garden, in which every plant has white flowers. And that's kind of an affectation, but if you have a certain design style in it's like the white living rooms that came in the 30s, from the furniture to the curtains to the floors.
Well,
avocado green.
When goth was popular, I had the best collection of mourning widow tulips.
I want to talk about that. We're going to take a real short break here just to do some squid biz, but we will be right back in just a few moments. So please stay tuned. This is In the Garden. I'm Stephen E. Pop. I'm here with Joe Truscott and Martin Quigley. We're talking about designing and constructing of a new garden and what to do, how to hire, all of the ins and outs. But there is a point that Joe brought up right before the break, which was, well, he mentioned goth gardens, and this is, you know, we're coming very close to that wonderful time of the year, one of my favorites in the old Celtic calendar. We're talking Samhain, and if you're All Saints and All Hallows and all those fun things, it's going to be Halloween on Friday, next Friday.
Right.
Now, a lot of people like to decorate their yards.
What
shouldn't you put in your yard,
Joe? Oh, that white fake spiderwebby thing across your shrubs.
It's a horrible nuisance.
And it's never put up properly, and then it's hard to get off. And so it can
and animals get caught in it. It can kill birds.
The birds take it back to their nest because they're building, and it's just
not
good.
It should be outlawed. I'm sorry. And you can make pretty effective spider webs on your own, but I don't have time to get into that right now.
Well, I had a trick-or-treater show up at my door and said, God, your spider webs look so realistic.
That's because they are. That's where we live.
It's really great after a nice nice mist in the morning to go out and see where they all are. That's amazing. Yeah. Oh, Lord, it looks like Mirkwood at my place. Jeez.
But anyway, decorations tend to be temporary, so don't do anything that's going to permanently affect your garden or your plants for a week or two or three. Or you can leave your Christmas lights up all year round, as so many happy people
do. Well, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you just have to change a few bulbs every year.
There you go.
I had a
that's my porch light.
I had a personal friend who decided to have a little corner of his garden be all lethally poisonous plants.
Oh, that's wonderful, yeah. Except you have to warn people. In fact, there are a couple of examples of poison gardens, a really good one in England and one at Michigan State University.
I've
in
seen oh, they're true. Oh, yeah, professionally grown gardens.
Absolutely.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, and they're labeled, and I've been to one, but
well,
yes.
You know, it's a useful public service, because if you don't know what poison oak looks like, you can go and see a sign that says, here's what it is, here's how you recognize it, and here's how you can deal with it. And all the things that you wouldn't know. One thing I wanted to say earlier when we were talking about relations between client and contractor or consultant, I like to take my clients out to the nurseries, do a couple of nursery things, and walk through and explain that you don't just want a particular tree. You want a shade tree. There are many choices you can make. And so that's where a really plant knowledgeable person can help a client who knows something but not all the choices that are available.
You know what else that's great for is to allow your client to have a reality check
on the prices.
Prices.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. But I was, since you mentioned local nurseries, several of them do offer landscaping services. Mm-hmm. Are you any kind of general comments about that and no names?
I know of one in Salinas that works very well. They're so busy they can rarely take on a new client, and that's an independent nursery in Salinas.
When the contractor's doing the design, of course, they're going to try to use the plants that they have in stock or can get a hold of. So they might be narrowing your choices a lot. On the other hand, a place like Capital Wholesale in San Jose will find plants. If you have a list of plants and you can't find them locally, they will broker and bring them in.
Yeah, I used to sell to them from my nursery as well.
Well, just as a how does it happen, aren't there sales agents that come to these nurseries and have a whole list of here's what we're offering, what do you want?
But there are services. There was one called Bamboo Pipeline back in the day, and they're out of San Diego or something. And they would get all of the nurseries, both independent and others, but definitely wholesale nursery salespeople's. They would send a client or an inspector out to your nursery to see, you know, do you have quality stock? Do you grow well? Then they put you on a master list. Then the landscapers or designers who are coming up with these plant lists could contact them, and they, as a service, would locate all the plants for them. Sometimes they'd have to be pulling a truck load from Northern California somewhere or from the local area, wherever, but they would consolidate those plants into a holding spot so they were ready for that designer or contractor to use. There are those who will just work from the local area and get what they can. You should know that wholesale prices, by the way, the wholesale growers, the general costs are pretty stable. Our margins would go up every year to a certain degree, or our costs would go up, I should say. So let's say a number one pot, it would cost us $2.50 to produce, and we would sell it for something.
Wholesale.
Mm-hmm. But then it gets marked up. And how much it gets marked up from there can be anywhere from 80 to 100 to 200%. And then you factor in the scarcity of the plant. You know, how unusual is it? How hard was it to grow or produce? How common is it in the trade? One of the things we used to love to do was to go to the San Francisco Garden Show every year. It used to be at the Cow Palace. Now it's somewhere in San Mateo, I think.
Used to be great.
It used to be great. Yeah, no, I've participated. I got to do a demo garden once. I was really thrilled to be on that team.
It was a victim of COVID, too?
Of the Cow Palace we would go there every year and see what the floor designs, because they would have these magnificent gardens done on the floor of the Cow Palace. you would go look for commonalities. So like one year it was going to be honey bush,
or Melianthus, vertical grasses, or
yeah, right. You know, some kind of, you know, or some succulent in particular. And I guarantee you, if you saw that in more than three of the displays on that floor, that was going to be the popular plant in demand for the coming year with designers and gardeners and what have you, what they wanted to see.
Let's do a little bit of Judge Judy here.
I'm innocent.
Guilty.
Get it in writing.
Yeah.
Agree to the terms. Get it in writing.
Hourly rate. Payment dates.
Who's going to do what? Mm-hmm. What the timetable is? What happens if something doesn't happen? Mm-hmm. If they can't get something, who replaces it?
If the plants fail, in what period of time?
Get as much of it in writing and signed and dated.
So one of the I love that, Joe. Thank you. And one of the things that I used to tell my clients was, are you going to put in an irrigation system? Yes, I'll guarantee my plants. You're not going to put in an irrigation system? You're going to water them all by hand? No, I don't guarantee my plant survival for beyond a month. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the deal. And I never had any problem with that. People totally agreed with that.
Well, there are many of us who would rather use a hose.
Absolutely.
Than a
system. And well,
you can
depending
control
on the
everything.
Size. Yeah. Yeah, and depending on the size of the area, too. Mm-hmm. So, but that's a great point to be made. Get it in writing. And if they refuse to do so for you, probably
get another
opinion.
Person.
Well, again, all your needs are individual. Not everybody. It's not a cookie cutter thing.
Right.
You need to establish a rapport with whoever you're working with, any kind of contractor, whether it's a design or a construction person. And you have to trust them. And so if a substitution has to be made, I couldn't get this holly shrub, but I've got another evergreen shrub with red berries, you'll love it.
Well, I also had a really wonderful friend who for many years was a landscape designer and had a whole crew of people out with her. And what would happen is people would meet her or see something. Could you come by my garden? Could you just take a look at my garden?
Mm-hmm.
And she would have to tell them, you know, that is my business.
That's right.
And here's what I charge. Yeah. I don't just, because we're friends. No, this is a business.
Listen, I am in several different support groups. And how often do I
the get, abused landscaper?
Yes, something like that. Yes, yes. Recovering, professionals of the
and, a 12-step program.
But I will actually have members of the group, you know, they'll start hitting me up for garden questions.
Well, and everybody,
extensive.
Everybody thinks it's free and that anybody involved with
plants. And, of course, we love it because we're just more than happy to share.
Well, we give advice, but I'm telling you, you don't ever walk up to a dentist at the at a cocktail party and say, can you look at my molar here?
Yeah,
I think I have a problem.
Uh-huh,
can you tell me what needs to be done? And the dentist will say,
make
an appointment.
That's
but
right.
Plant people, because we're bursting with knowledge, are eager to share. We give away too much information.
We get no respect.
And then how do you expect to charge for it later?
Another thing that I like to ask when I'm initially working with a new client, one, do they have any plant allergies? Are there any plants that they're horribly allergic to? Two, what do they really like in terms of color? Mm-hmm. I have had clients, before I would ask this question, it's why I did or do ask, is I would design something with a lot of yellows. Oh, I hate yellow. Oh, I just can't. I don't want any yellow or white. Oh, no.
I saw this movie with Vincent Price, and it was all yellow, and they went crazy.
Yeah,
and
there
I
you
never
go.
Got
there
over
you go.
It.
There you
now,
go.
No.
You know, I mean, it's one thing if they want the goth garden, and they want everything in blacks and reds and bloods, and those are fun to
or
do.
Or thorny themed.
You know, who doesn't like Love Lies Bleeding? The amaranth that was growing at Monticello.
As a name, yes.
Well, remember, common names can be misleading. Love Lies Bleeding is fairly specific.
That's
but
right.
When you hear the word daisy, you think, well, daisy is
Astrid
any
AC
round
family?
Flower.
How big is that family?
But it's beyond that.
Sorrel.
Anything that's round with a...
Sorrel is another one.
Yeah. So make sure that your consultant knows what daisy you're talking about.
A sunflower is just a daisy on steroids, that's all. So
yes, so is dandelion.
Yes, and I have a pink dandelion in my yard now. I'm so thrilled. It was a specialty dandelion.
Are you guys members of those native plant sort of Facebook pages? I want to take a picture of a dandelion and put it up there and say, what plant is this? It's showing up in my yard. And you'll get 25 answers to it.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Speaking of native plants, we've talked about this before, and I want you to be very clear. Native plants are not the only plants that will thrive in this climate zone.
Hallelujah.
And these soils. Native plants are no magic bullet. You still need the horticulture to go with them. Just because they are native somewhere in California does not make them suitable for the Central Coast.
Nor does it make them all drought resistant or drought
or anything else. So again, a plant is a plant, and you want the best plants, the best performance for your site.
And I still maintain, if you want to know what's going to grow well in your garden, have a walk around your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. See what's doing really well. You might find
see
something
what's doing horribly.
See what's doing horribly. I'm going to go out after the show across the street and look at this tree that's in beautiful,
isn't it gorgeous?
Crimson red, flaming
if you happen to be in the Harvey West neighborhood.
Yeah. Oh,
the liquid ambers. The liquid ambers, the sweet gums are changing.
I think this is a different tree. This is a bright scarlet red.
Yeah, that's
I think it's a pistache.
Pistache.
Pistache chinensis, Chinese pistachio. But yeah, it is gorgeous.
There is fall color in Central Coast, but not the entire forest worth. It's not Vermont. So you're not going to get the reds and oranges.
But you can do it. You can do it here.
Parodia,
there are different species.
Parodia persica is a wonderful tree in the witch hazel family, and it has purple fall color.
Oh, nice.
Purple with red in it.
I like Nisa sylvatica.
Oh, beautiful.
But black gum tupelo, yeah.
But that wants to live in Virginia.
It wants water, for one thing. I have one at home. It's doing well. It's okay. Yeah. But it gets lots of water.
I have a client with a 40-foot-tall Nisa sylvatica. It's magnificent.
Oh, they're in black bark. Anyway.
Oh, there are several Japanese maple that are growing in these secluded gardens. And, man, they're gorgeous.
They are. And Japanese maples are a specialty of mine because they get very, very dense. Those smaller maples are very twiggy. And you want that lovely form. You don't want just a bush on a stick. You want to open it up a little bit and see the branches going horizontally. And so when I walk around a neighborhood, I am tempted to slip my card under the front door and say, excuse me, your Japanese maple could be so much lovelier.
And when do you start doing that?
Anytime. Actually, it's better to do when it's dormant. You don't want to do it in the middle of the growing months.
Wait till the leaves fall off. Is that true with fruit trees?
In general, fruits, the apples and pears and all that, they are usually pruned in November, December.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, go ahead.
I don't know why this came up, but I just had this memory of going around old Palo Alto and seeing persimmon trees in the wintertime.
Oh.
Hanging with fruit all winter long, black bark, orange, bright orange fruits. Mm-hmm. Such a sight.
They last a long time on the tree, the same way grapes do. If you don't harvest them, you can let them hang for months sometimes.
Until they go to
raisins. If you want fruit trees, fruit trees are messy, but so are other things too. Or I had a client who wanted to remove all the mature trees on her lot because she said they drop leaves and they're messy.
Oh.
And I actually told her, I'm afraid I can't work with you on that.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. You have some integrity. You heard it right here, folks, on In the Garden. Dr. Martin Quigley.
let me get my chainsaw.
But your consultant, your contractor, they have to be honest with you, and I think you can determine that fairly quickly. But do think about going to a nursery with some kind
of
expert or who knows it, and you can see what the range of choices. Go to a few wholesale places.
And don't go to just one nursery, and don't go to a box store nursery.
Well, those things.
You have to know the plants. I mean, we visited this very quaint inn that had Cecil Bruners on it, and they were so afraid of damaging them. I said, it's a weed. Get a chainsaw. Cut it back. It'll grow all. It's got a healthy root system.
What's a Cecil Bruner?
It's a rose.
It's a rose.
Climbing.
Right.
Pink.
And
wonderful.
People will know.
Yeah.
And a lot of things need pruning for best performance. Mm-hmm. You just can't let them go wild.
Nope.
Boy, oh boy. Yes.
And remember, it isn't nature. It's part of nature, but it's not wild nature. A garden is a maintained space.
Mm-hmm. And you've got limited water. You've got some improved soil. You're going to get weeds. Now that it's started to rain, I'm looking around. I'm seeing oxalis popping up. That's what's going to happen.
I'm almost oxalis free after 3 years of vigorous weeding. It's true. I have hardly any.
Oh, man, it's all over
the place. Neighbors have a lot, though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
No matter what you do with your gophers or your weed species, you know, if the neighbors aren't doing something similar, it's not going to hold.
Oh, and all those grasses, Bermuda grass, Kikuyu grass, they go right under the fence.
Well, this has been a very stimulating and interesting conversation here, gentlemen. I think that any last, you know, nuggets of wisdom, jewels for our listeners on how to approach the concept of doing a renovation or installing a new garden and getting a design?
I think the one of the best things is walk the neighborhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look around. Go into, knock on doors. Ask people if they know what the plants are.
Sometimes they don't.
And many times they don't. Oh, yeah, I know what that is. It's called a rose.
Mm. I think. Yeah.
I gave a talk to some realtors a few months ago, and I said, you know, you need a consultant to come in before you stage the house and tell you what could be staged in the landscape. And how you could make it look better, what it needs with minimal cost to stage your garden or front yard the same way you would with the dining room. And that is, it's a real good thing to do. Mm-hmm. And if a client says, well, what kind of tree is that? And the realtor says, I have no idea. You could have a list. Your consultant could give you a list of what the important plants are because it's a sales point.
Well, it's a totally – thank you, because it is a proven fact that a well-maintained yard or a beautiful landscape will enhance the value of your property.
Curb appeal.
And we always used to joke if we went around the neighborhood and we saw the garden that was going to hell, we'd say there's a renter.
Yeah, and it usually was.
Well, it's the landlord's fault.
Yeah, of course it's the landlord's fault.
But, yeah, he lived in Sacramento.
I live by the standard of I always try to leave a place better.
Always. I'm the one who planted trees in rental houses.
There you go.
Absolutely. But, you know, again, a warning. If you just bought a new house, if you're going to attack a garden and stuff, wait. See what those plants that are there already do.
That's right.
And
if they haven't been damaged by the construction.
Yeah, if you can trim them back, if you can give them a year, especially there may be a beautiful set of bulbs that are in the ground if you bought a house and you don't know that until it all comes out.
The herbaceous perennials.
Exactly. Yes. Don't start ripping stuff out until you've at least given it a chance.
It's hard to do that when you want to start doing something, but you can give yourself a treat. Do some pots.
Well, gentlemen, this has been a wonderful conversation. I hope our listeners have enjoyed it, and we are going to be back again next Saturday with another show.
We take suggestions.
Absolutely.
Thank you. It's easy to send us an email, info@ksqd.org. It'll come to us. We'll get it. Pick up the phone and give us a message.
All right.
Those come too.
Well, thank you so much again for a wonderful show. Thank you to our listeners. And until next Saturday, happy gardening.
Happy gardening. And remember, gardeners live longer than other people.
Yes, that's me. I'm going to live forever.
Oh.